Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, psychic, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio television talk show personality. She brings to the airwaves talented people from around the world who share their insights and experiences with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and we're going to be talking about a little bit of whimsy, a little bit of fact, and, well, we'll toss in a few things of this and that. This is Donna Sebo. My guest today is absolutely delightful. Her name is Linda Radish, and her book is called The Old Magic of Christmas. And when I got the book, I said, old magic. Okay, now what are we going to have here? Well, as I said, it's a little bit of this, it's a little bit of that. She is a librarian. And if you've ever met librarians, they are people that know a lot about a whole bunch of stuff. They can always tell you where things are if you need to know where to look. Well, she's taken her talents, put them to work in a marvelous way. In this book, The Old Magic of Christmas, Yuletide Traditions for the Darkest Days of the Year. Linda, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me. I should clarify, in case there are any real librarians listening, that I am a library assistant. If you don't have your Master's of Library Science, which I don't, then you can't call yourself a librarian. So
let me just make that clear. Thank you very, very much. I appreciate that correction. Now, this is something, the topic of Christmas, Christmas itself, as we know it today, is a modern version.
Yes.
Like any big holiday, it is something that has evolved. It's really evolved. And I love the quote right at the beginning of your book where you said, listen, we're beginning our story. When we arrive at the end of it, we shall, it is hoped, no more than we do now. And that was written by Hans Christian Andersen in The Snow Queen. Of course, you have her story in here, too. He's such a charismatic writer. And I think that he wrote not just for children, but also for himself, because the times he lived in were pretty difficult. What made you decide to take on this project?
Well, it's been a long time coming. I think, well, Hans Christian Andersen, The Snow Queen, was read to me by my father when I was probably kindergarten age, and he was reading very flowery Victorian translation of the story. I still have the book. I think it was published in the late 1800s, that one. And so that's something. As I say, Snow Queen is not strictly speaking a Christmas story, but as I was researching this book, a lot of the Snow Queen in many ways resembles the old Yuletide goddess who went by many names. But as far as what inspired me to write it, I think maybe the next signpost along the way was when I was a teenager, I saw a cheap dramatization of The Box of Delights, which was written in the 50s by John Masefield, and that's a Christmas story for children that has werewolves in it and Herne the Hunter, and all kinds of things you don't expect to find in a Christmas special if you've grown up with Rudolph and Santa Claus Is Coming to Town. And that was the first inkling I had that, oh, wow, there's this dark and mysterious side to Christmas. And so it's always kind of been with me. And finally, I thought, well, let me get it all out into a book. And when I was working on it, and people would say, what are you working on? And I would say, oh, I'm writing about, Christmas ghosts and witches. And they'd say, there are Christmas ghosts and witches? Which was, I was very happy to hear, because that means somebody, people need to know about it.
Mm-hmm. And that was part of the fun of reading your material, because people have a very difficult time in today's world. We take so much for granted. We have electricity. And they don't realize, and so many other conveniences, they don't realize that there was a time when holidays, they were called pagan holidays, these holidays were established because it was a very difficult lifestyle. You didn't have electricity. You didn't have energy. if you didn't have a good storage of wood, if you didn't live in an environment where you had good protection from the elements of the weather, I mean, here in the Pacific Northwest and you're in New Jersey, you know, the further north you go, the darker and longer your days are. In Alaska, you're lucky if you have 2 hours of daylight or 4 hours of daylight in Anchorage. And when you get up into certain areas, it's almost 24 hours of darkness.
And I didn't even know what darkness was growing up in New Jersey. I didn't know what dark darkness was until I went out to New Mexico, and I was in a little town called Abiquiu and pulled up, got out of the car, and it is dark. I couldn't find myself my way across a dirt road. But for our ancestors, you know, once the sun went down, that was that.
Absolutely true. So much of what was a festival helped these people to get through the darker periods. And I have to chuckle when I think of how people are affected here in the Pacific Northwest. They have sad. Oh, gee whiz. Yeah, great. Can you imagine how it was for our ancestors who didn't have the convenience of light, television, a distraction from that darkness? And you bring out a point right at the beginning of your book that there was a time when what we would call the Christmas season went from late October to February. Well, it's getting very, very dark then. Very dark.
And
Halloween is at the end of October. We have Thanksgiving, and there were other festivals, but this was really a lot of fun because on January the 5th, in certain cultures, you have the Epiphany Eve on January the 5th, and there is this fascinating character, La Befana. I've never heard of her, and by golly, she sounds like a hearty Italian. Here she is. What does she do? Who is she? And when
I think
she set up?
She's probably one of the better known of the Christmas witches out there. And her name, La Befana, is from Epifania, which is Latin and Italian for the Epiphany, which was when that is celebrated as the day that the wise men arrived in Bethlehem and presented their gifts to the baby Jesus, and therefore that really proclaimed him as something special. Before that, nobody really knew. Well, there was the star overhead, but nobody was really sure. So in the church calendar, that was a more important day, actually, than Christmas and Christmas Eve. And so, but although her name, well, her name is Befana from Epiphania, because the wise men, according to her legend, they stopped by her house on their way to Bethlehem, and they asked her for directions, but she was busy sweeping her yard, and she just kind of pointed the way, and they said, "Do you want to come with us?" And she said, no, I have to clean. So they went on their way, and then she had second thoughts. She baked some cookies, thought she would like to go see this special baby, and she went after them, but they had already left her in the dust. She couldn't pick up the trail, and she's been flying around. That broom she was using in the yard has now carried her through the sky, and she's been flying around ever since looking for the baby Jesus so she can give him presents. But in the meantime, she doesn't want to miss him, so she just drops toys down all the children's chimneys on Twelfth Night, the eve of Epiphany.
Fascinating. Isn't human imagination wonderful? Here we have something that comes up that, what a great story, a positive thing, and lessons learned. And when you think of what you just said, it's like, hey, lady, forget. Cleaning, if some opportunity comes along, take the opportunity, forget the dirt, because it's going to be there when you come back.
It'll still be there.
I just love how these stories incorporate some kind of a lesson, the fable, and it's always the power of story, isn't it? It's just absolutely fascinating. Now, we've got to talk about Frigga's Eve. This one I'd never heard of either. As you can tell, listeners, there's a lot of things I don't know about. But this was spinning, was forbidden on this particular Eve. How did this get started?
Well, Frigga's Eve is actually Thursday night, because in the Germanic countries, Germany, Scandinavia, Austria, the day begins at dusk of the day before, just like the Jewish mm-hmm. holidays do now. So Frigga's Eve is the eve before Friday. Friday is named for Frigga or Freya in Old English. And that was her sacred day, and everybody needs a day off. You know, women need it. They used to spin. If you had to weave your own clothing, you needed thread. You were always spinning. You were spinning when you took the sheep out. You were spinning on your way to market. You were, of course, spinning in the evenings when somebody else was spinning a yarn to entertain you. And Frigga was the more domestic goddess. She was the wife of Odin, the sort of king of the Norse gods who lived in Asgard, and she was very concerned with women getting their spinning done, by the end of the week, and also by the end of the year, because you're not supposed to be spinning during the 12 days of Christmas. You're supposed to have that all done, because after the feasting is done, you should be able to set up the loom, and then you've got to spend your time weaving. So all that spinning has to be done. And Befana, actually, while she's part of the story of the wise men, she's just as much another incarnation of this Frigga, because Frigga was also portrayed as the witch who would come and punish you if you did not finish your spinning on time. If she found unspun fiber in the household, she might break your distaff or do all kinds of things. And she was also, as time went by, as those lands became more Christianized, she became less of a goddess, more of a witch. And then all of a sudden we see, as under the name Hola or Bertha, then she's flying on a broomstick. And she
I love
can,
that
she,
broomstick. I mean, that
it
broom
keeps
gets
popping
a lot
up.
Of work.
Yes.
It gets so much work. And Frau Hola, I mean, this is something, and I just love this, because there's so many versions you share, you know, little differences here. And I loved how she was always looking for good help. That sounds pretty modern. That's another change. And if you wanted to apply for a maid's position in her house, you first had to pass through water, either the pool in which she bathed to make herself young again, or an ordinary well. I mean, she was a tough employer. Jeez. Anyhow, you have all of these fun stories, and I just loved it. And in Switzerland, and this take, I mean, you go around the world, it's just wonderful. The White Lady, and I love this gal because it sounds more like a story for Halloween, but she haunts a particular place called Rockford in Essex, and she pops over headless to Henberg Castle in Kent. This is a woman that really has an agenda, I would say, and again, I just think that this is absolutely wonderful. You talk about how with the Snow Queen, which is a very significant story, but you have Old Perchta, and the key was people tried to deal with their environment in the best way possible. And so if you didn't have anything to keep light around you in a way, like you were talking about what you went through in New Mexico, when you're in a place, It's dark. If you don't have electricity, if you don't have candles, if you don't have something, you know, people didn't have LEDs at that time. And so they would make music. They would do whatever they could to keep things positive. And you bring out so many things. And I love these craft projects. Now, you're a crafter yourself, aren't you?
Yes, I am. Yes.
And this brought back memories, because when I was a little girl, I can remember, was it in kindergarten or first grade, something like that, we were cutting out white pieces of paper to make crystals that could be hung in the windows at home, or we'd paste them or do something with them. I mean, they were all over the place. And it was just such a joy to see how everybody's project turned out. And you have a white witch window star project in here that children, adults can do. And what a wonderful thing for families. I just think this is a great idea.
It's fun because I have the one pattern in there, which she's called the White Witch Window Star, because she looks like eight little witches all gathered together. But you can, as soon as you start folding, you think of different ways of folding. I did a program at a shop bookstore called Soul Journey in Butler, New Jersey, and we did that. And of course, by their second stars, they were already improvising. The students were already improvising and folding it different ways. So that one is a lot of fun. Yes, the possibilities are endless.
Well, I think what's very nice with it, too, is in so many ways, the holidays become very commercialized. And it's so easy just to go and to buy something. But when you can involve a family in projects, especially the children, this allows them to expand their imaginations. You can use colored paper. It's fun. You can use glitter. There's just so much you can do. And just turn off the television and just all get involved and everybody clean up the mess and then have sugar cookies and cake and cider and whatever it is. There is something very magical, I think, about the Christmas season. It is just one of my favorite holidays. I absolutely adore it. I love the music. I love everything about it. And I love the evolution that it's gone through. Because as you point out in the book, in many cultural aspects, there was a lot of fear, and it's taken so many centuries for this fear to be supplanted by this happy, jolly Santa that evolved because of designers and developers here in America that's dearly loved. And I just love what we have today. But if you go back into cultures, you go back into Russian culture, you don't find the happy ho-ho-ho. You've got all kinds of things that you are fearful of. And that's part of what you bring out in the book, the cultural heritage that's behind where we are today. Now, let's drop off into the area of Finland. You have a delightful section on the Finns and the story about the Finns king's daughter. And this is all about elves, and that is part of the Christmas magic.
It's that version is called The Finn King's Daughter, but it's actually a story that you find throughout Scandinavia and even further. It's part of the Princess in the Mound folklore motif, and I like it because the heroine of the story is a princess. But there's so many clues in there that tell us that she was more than, she was probably a priestess. She's imprisoned by her father in a mound with her nine handmaidens because he's got to go away to war, and he doesn't want her getting into trouble with the new stable boy that they've got there in their hall. And there's a lot of this throughout the book. St. Barbara, who tomorrow is December 3rd is St. Barbara's Eve. Lucy, we have St. Lucy, we have where either the, if it was a Christian martyr, it was a girl who did not want to get married and her pagan father wanted to marry her, so he put her up in a tower. In this case, she's interested in the stable boy, but the father sticks her in a mound so she won't get into trouble. And but this is a very old strain in this one, because elves were very much associated with mounds, and offerings were made to them of meat, of silver, of milk. We found special cup mark stones where milk was poured in as an offering, and the elves were a huge part of this time of year, because we know we go on about the solstice a lot. The days are getting darker and longer, and we have to rekindle the sun. But there is also the idea this is the end of the year, and where we get to something called intercalary days, which in our calendar it's been nicely adjusted, so we don't have, except for leap year, we don't have intercalary days. But in the past, at the end of the year, you would add extra days to make up for the year not being exactly 365 days, so it doesn't go completely out of kilter and you've got Christmas in the middle of summer. And these 12 days of Christmas, this time at the end of the year, and then the new year is beginning, is sort of like the year's twilight. And twilight was also a time when elves would appear and brush elbows with us mortals. And so the end of the year, that's when the elves, the Icelandic elves, move house at that time, and you're more likely to run into them. And also this princess in the mound, there's only one reference in the story to Christmas, but she really is one of these elves trying to get home, because ultimately the elves were the dead, the recently dead and the less recently dead, who liked to return to their homes and haunts at Christmas time or the earlier Yule.
There's, again, it's so delightful to see all of these different cultural aspects, because when people migrated to America a few centuries ago, they brought their culture with them. And that's what happens whenever people migrate to a new area. They take what they know with them. And I loved Black Peter. And I'm not Dutch, but among the Dutch, Black Peter is St. Nicholas's sole attendant. And
right.
He's got a Spanish Moorish identity, and I love this explanation, that if you go and talk to a child who is Dutch, the child will say that the reason the face of the page is black, it's because he's got to go up and down sooty chimneys to fill the children's shoes so that St. Nicholas won't soil his costly bishop's robes. And I thought, that's a kid's logic. I mean, this is our world today, and here we have these adaptations that evolve. And I think it's charming, but, oh, the dream of the rod, the section here, brought to mind the old quote out of the Bible, spare the rod, spoil the child. And my goodness, I had no idea that went all the way back to Scandinavian countries, that particular adage itself. Tell us about that.
Well, it's a matter of not just spare the rod, spoil the child, but use the rod and the child will thrive. And this is found throughout Europe, back into ancient times, certainly into pagan times. In Pennsylvania, you see it with the Bells-Nickel, who was a sort of a scary version of St. Nicholas, who would come and bring candy and hard cookies to the kids, and he would not hand them out. He would scatter them on the floor. So even if you were a good kid, you had to watch out for his whip. If you wanted to get that candy, you had to reach out, and you're probably going to get a bit of a whip across the knuckles. And that was not so much a punishment or a warning. It's become to be that, but it was a blessing to be whipped into vigor and health and long life. And even in ancient Rome, people used to give branches from the sacred grove of the goddess Strenia, and Strenia was the goddess of vigor. And so this was the time to beat things. As the year is dying, we got to beat life back into everything and everyone, including the apple trees. The apple trees in some places were also whipped. They were splashed with cider and they were whipped. And so the beating is it's a blessing. It's something nice. It's wishing you, and even physically, it can be in Finland, in the sauna, your Christmas Eve is not complete unless you've, you know, gone into the hot, steamy sauna and the family whips each other with leafy birch branches, which I think gets the blood going, gets the blood circulating.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it does. That's something they've done for centuries. That's a part of it. And even a Native American culture, and they don't know anything about this, but somehow or another, the knowledge got passed along. This is something often that certain cultures will do among the Native Americans, because it is getting out what is no longer healthy for the body. Your book, The Old Magic of Christmas, is absolutely marvelous, but I had to chuckle because, again, we're going back into these environments that are so old, and you have a character called Nissie, N-I-S-S-E, and this is from the Norwegian environment,
Yes, Norway and Denmark.
Yeah, so here it's very important. Where we put out milk and cookies, which definitely are a nice combination, for them, culturally, it was putting out a bowl of porridge with a fat pat of butter in the middle. And also the Nisi likes cake and beer. So they, you know, they were using what they had at that time. And sustenance during winter was very important because you couldn't survive. And also being grateful. If you had a good crop, you had enough food to get you through winter. And their winters are brutal. So here you have this tradition on Christmas Eve. I mean, how many people would jump up and down putting out a bowl of porridge with a big fat batch of butter there? I don't think that would go over big today. I think the cookies and the milk would stay in preference. But tell us about Nisi.
Well, it's there's the Nis in Norway and Denmark and the Tomten in Sweden. And he's like an elf. If you see him now on, you know, at a Scandinavian Christmas fair, he's a tiny little guy. In real life, he's supposed to be the size of a one-year-old child. And he's just a little old man, and he hangs around the farmstead. And his job is to take care of the animals, keep good luck and abundance coming into the household. He's not really interested in the people. He prefers the cat, and it's known that he shares his Christmas porridge with the cat because they're good friends. And he's descended from a larger manifestation known sometimes as the Gardvord or the Tonkal, which was a larger, more mischievous ghost, could cause more trouble. But as time has gone by, he's shrunken to these gnome-like proportions. And he seems to be a late manifestation of actually ancestor worship, that this is the spirit of the founding member of that farmstead, whoever came and cleared a space in the north woods there and established a home and fields, that he's still lingering there. And you do have to acknowledge him by putting out that offering. Sometimes the clothes in the old days were offered too. And so now he's just thought of as, you know, he's, if you see him on, Swedish or Norwegian napkins and wrapping paper, he looks very cute, you know, like a close cousin of our garden gnome. But he was once something a little more serious and really demanded respect. And there are still rules about how to deal with him. You don't spy on him, just like with our Santa Claus. You leave the food and then you withdraw. You don't wait and spy on him while he's eating or while he's doing his work, because he might desert you and the luck of your home is going to go with him.
You have, excuse me, you have so many wonderful stories in this book, The Old Magic of Christmas. I love the story about how children who are born on Christmas Day, they're especially gifted. They believe, or their belief is there, that they are very, very blessed. And it's because they have the gift of being able to have a special ability. They feel this is just something very special. You have the Yule boar. You have the Yule brick. I hadn't heard of any of this stuff. This is marvelous. What a charming book to be able to share with a family, to maybe take once a week or maybe every night before Christmas. What a wonderful tradition this could start. Well, you learn about these legions of ghosts. You learn about elves. You learn about a history that we never discuss. We never talk about.
Most people not aware of it.
That is absolutely true. These are traditions that much of what we enjoy today has been transformed into a whole different picture. But when you can go back and understand why certain things evolved, so that people could get through their difficult times in their winters. It's absolutely amazing. And these are very, very old. Linda Radish, you have done a marvelous job with this book, The Old Magic of Christmas. And if people would like to find out more about it, this is something that I think is a marvelous addition to anyone's library. You can go to www.llewellyn.com, that's LLEWELLYN.com, or you can go to Linda's Facebook page. And what you do is facebook.com/ Linda Radish, and her last name is spelled R-A-E-D-I-S-C-H. Linda, this is a wonderful book. Thanks ever so much for sharing with us today, and I wish you continued success with it.
Thanks very much, and Merry Christmas, and enjoy your Advent season.
Thank you. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to be taking a break for just a moment. Don't go away. We've got a lot of fun things to share. We'll be right back.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Amino Muscle Snack Time, the chewable nutrition that feeds your muscles. Amino acids are the building blocks of protein. When you exercise, muscle tissue naturally breaks down. This low-cal, chewable snack helps to reverse that process and won't pack on the pounds. You can chew a few tasty vanilla tablets or any one of their other flavors before or after physical exercise, right before bedtime or first thing in the morning to jumpstart your metabolism into gear for the day. Convenient to carry in a purse, backpack, or briefcase, they are a tasty snack for the person on the go. Firm, fit muscles, trim, healthy body. Sound good to you? Check out Amino Muscle Snack Time Chewable Nutrition by going to Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Tone up, trim up, and nourish your body to the fitness level you desire. Amino Muscle Snack Time Nutritional Tablets. Check out the information and order today. Go to Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Order now.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone number, if you'd like to call in and chat with me, is 888-627-6008, and I will be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of insight, if that's something you would like for me to do. I wanted to share something with you that I really, really enjoyed. This is a poem, and it's been around for a long time. But as we're entering into the holiday season, I think there's sometimes we just need to slow down and give ourselves a chance to have a breather and to think about what is evolving. Where would we like to see ourselves maybe in a year's time? And this poem was written, I honestly don't know when, but it's quite a powerful one. And this is how it reads. When you get what you want in your struggle for self and the world, makes you a king for a day. Just go to the mirror and look at yourself and see what that man has to say. For it isn't your father or mother or wife whose judgment upon you must pass. The fellow whose verdict counts most in your life is the one staring back from the glass. Some people may think you're a straight-shooting chum and call you a wonderful guy, but the man in the glass says you're only a bum if you can't look him straight in the eye. He's the fellow to please, never mind all the rest, for he's with you clear up to the end. And you have passed your most dangerous, difficult test if the man in the glass is your friend. You may fool the whole world down your pathway of years and get pats on the back as you pass, but your final reward will be heartache and tears if you cheated the man in the glass. Of course, using the term man is generic, but I think that these are very powerful words because it's so important for us to have integrity with ourselves. And for some reason, and I don't know why this is, it takes a while to learn that. I find that there are many situations with many people where they become very confused about that. Working as a counselor, these are things that I often find myself having to deal with people. It's almost as if we're afraid of who we can really be. It's afraid of who we are. We're afraid of who we are. And we shouldn't be. You see, each and every one of us are unique individuals. And as individuals, we're going to have our own particular talents and skills. And we don't need to lie, cheat, and steal to acknowledge that maybe we're not so good in certain areas and we're best in others. But life has a way of implanting seeds of discontent, seeds of fear. And then it seems like two companions, greed, self-centeredness, leads to something called corruption. And then all of a sudden, the walls come tumbling down. And we have to look at that person in the mirror and actually face, if we're wise, we do, we'll face it and say, I don't like what I see. So what are you going to do with that? How are you going to manage it? Well, there you go. You have to have integrity with yourself. And I was aware of someone just recently that was talking about a journey that they went through, and this was quite a challenge for them because they found they really enjoyed being the victim. And it wasn't until one day that this individual had someone confront them. And they weren't nasty, but they were just very blunt and to the point, and basically telling the individual to grow up. That they had to assume their position in life, owe up to the fact that they made the choices that they made. Nobody really forced them into it. They made choices, and they needed to be able to respect those choices and acknowledge their position of responsibility with them, and what were they going to do with it. That person didn't want to hear it, but it gnawed at their psyche quite a bit, until finally, it took them about 5 years, the individual realized that they needed to take the position of responsibility, because somehow or another that message kept coming back to them. You are not the victim. Look at what you've done. Look at your choices. And I think that that is so important in today's world. It's so easy for us to point a finger at a government, and I'm not saying that they don't need to be cleaned up, but government and this and that and the other. But I think if we can have integrity with who we are, and we walk the walk, we just don't flap the lips and let the words come out, but really have integrity with ourselves. This is something that carries over. And then when a collective group of individuals, regardless of their diversity, realize that they can make a difference for all of the diversity they have, if they have the common purpose of right action, it is powerful stuff. It really is. And we've seen it demonstrated over and over again. But we have to start with ourselves. And this is a great time to begin looking at where we are, what we're doing. If we're not happy, then what can we do to make a shift? You start with yourself. Some of the richest people I have known have been people that understand that the greatness of life, the richness of life, lies within themselves. And then they expand it outwardly, and one is just amazed at what they're able to accomplish. So usually on a daily basis, they have to be mindful about how they think, what they do, and how do they want to really be perceived in the positioning of integrity with themselves? It really makes a difference. And for all of the challenges we have, this holiday season I think is absolutely awesome. I just absolutely adore it. Yes, I know I'm being repetitive, but I do. I think it's awesome. And just like with Linda doing her research, there are some people who would say, my goodness, when you go back into that kind of history, Donna, don't you realize that this is something that's bad or blah, blah, blah? And I go, wait a minute, what are you getting bad from? This is history. Don't get caught up with what no longer is. Be aware that it took an evolution to get us to where we are today. You can't do anything about the past, but if you're not educated about the past, how the blue blazes do you think you're ever going to be able to do anything with the present, much less work with the future? That's why reading is so important. It is very important. Turn off the television. Give yourself some time to explore, to investigate. And I know the holiday season is frantically busy. Boy, do I know that. But take time, gift time to yourself. Fix a cup of hot cocoa, get out a good book, do something just for you. Turn off all of the technology, just back away from it all, and do what you need to do. You're going to be amazed at how refreshing that is for you. I adore technology on many levels. It drives me nuts on others, and I'm sure you feel the same way. Tomorrow, we're going to be talking about business. We're going to be talking with William Cohen about a man who had a phenomenal impact on the world of business. It's called Peter, he is called Peter Drucker. The book is called The Practical Drucker. William Cohen was one of his students, and the wisdom in this book is just incredible. Brian Haggerty, we're going to be talking with, put that cell phone down and look me in the eye. Aha, yes. This is someone that has an axe to grind regarding technology. The Power of Aura, Susan Szymanski. Susan has been involved in the work of mind and study for many, many years, and she's put together this very, very informational book. There's a lot of details in it that I think will surprise you. And then Ken Potty, this is a man whose story is just amazing. He's a World War II survivor, and there are two books that have been written about him. We're going to be talking with his wife, Mrs. Poppy, codenamed Sunny, and then also Mountains of Fire. I was hearing a commentary last night about an interview done with a World War II veteran. Of course, Pearl Harbor is coming up on the 7th of this month. And we need to pay attention to these things. We need to pay attention to the trauma that have been experienced by generations past. I have someone that I know of that says, forget all this stuff. We should not dwell on this. Again, there are reasons for studying history. There are reasons for listening to the stories of those that have survived horrific events. Because it's only through understanding those stories that we can really move forward in life in a very, very special way that allows us to maintain a level of freedom for ourselves. We're going to be taking a break in just a moment, but before we do that, I want to let you know that I'm going to share with you a recipe for Norwegian cooking. Now, we were discussing all kinds of things in the earlier part of the show, but this just an amazing amount of recipes that in the Norwegian tradition are absolutely scrumptious. And of course, the holiday season, again, it's the festivity, it's dealing with the celebration of happiness, of family, and of the abundance that we are able to enjoy. So we're going to be talking about that when we come back. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you would like to chat. Telephone number to call into is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. We're going to be right back.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604.
Do you have a product or service that you would like people to know about? Internet radio is a powerful medium that can assist you in reaching people who like to shop online and pass by electronic word of mouth information about you, your products, and or services. The Donna Sebo Show reaches around the world, and you can be part of that enterprising network. For more information, contact Vision Broadcasting via Donna at DelphiInternational.com
or call 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone number, if you'd like to chat with me, is 888-627-6008. This is an orange loaf cake, and I think that this is a cake that would be fabulous to serve, you know, a holiday morning. Or if you're going to have a brunch, actually any time of the year, but especially during the winter months, this is a loaf cake that is scrumptious, and it's really, really easy to make. And this is traditionally very popular. You can make it in advance, and you can put it in the freezer. If you wanted to make a couple of loaves, like if you're going to have a big brunch for family, or you know, if you really wanted to do something and not have you wanted to have something nice, but you didn't want to have to do this and have all the stress of making sure that all kinds of things were ready to go. So this you could freeze. And what you're going to need, all the ingredients need to be at room temperature. You need 2 eggs, 2/3 of a cup of sugar, 1/2 cup of butter, 1 cup of your favorite orange marmalade, 1/2 cup of milk, and use your whole milk. Use the milk that has the fats in it. Sometimes I like to use evaporated milk, too. That gives a whole different density. 3/4 of a cup of raisins, 2 cups of flour, unbleached white flour, and 2 teaspoons of baking powder. This is how simple it is. Your eggs and your sugar, you're going to beat them with your electric mixer until they're light and fluffy. Then the butter, and you can melt it in your microwave. You want to melt the butter. You want to make sure it's cool. It's still going to be liquidy, but cool. And then you want to whip that with the egg mixture. Put in your marmalade, your milk, and your raisins, mixing it all really well. Then you want to sift in the flour and the baking powder, and you want to mix it thoroughly. Then you use a large bread pan. Pour the batter into the pan. You make sure the bread pan is well greased. Use that nonstick spray, cooking spray. And then you're going to bake it at 350 degrees on the lowest rack in your oven, 55 to 60 minutes. And it makes one large loaf. Now, I know in my oven, because I have an electric oven, I would not put it on the lowest rack because of the coil that's at the bottom. If you have a gas oven, no problem. But for me, I'll still put it in the middle rack because it just seems to work a lot better. But this, it takes about 55 to 60 minutes for it to bake, and it is wonderful in your kitchen. It's going to just smell incredibly good. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you would like to chat. Telephone number to call into is 888-627-6008. Well, a little bit of the mystical. And I wanted to share this story with you because we're in the time of the mystical anyway. But I thought I would just share a story with you about a situation that, well, it's a little bit different. And it's about a trucker tangling with an alien. Mm-hmm. Ah, yes. This is what happened, and it was in 1954. And, of course, we all have heard stories about people's experience with extraterrestrials through the years. Well, this occurred on November the 28th, 1954, 2 o'clock in the morning. Now, there were two truckers. They were driving between Caracas and Petare, Venezuela. They turned a sharp corner in the road, and there it was, right in front of them. A UFO. It was hovering about 5 feet in the air directly in front of their truck. Well, these guys had never seen anything like this before. They get out of their vehicle. Well, there was this short, hairy, dwarf-like creature, that's how they described it, that went after this one driver whose name was Gustavo, the other one was Jose. Now, this is what happened. The trucker, do you think he was going to, these guys are usually pretty good size, and do you think he's going to be intimidated by a little short dwarf? I don't think so. In fact, he actually grabbed this dwarf. And he said the dwarf was, or the ET, was wearing only a light brown loincloth over his body. And the next thing that this driver, Gustavo, knows is he's going through the air. He was thrown by this little itsy-bitsy guy. And he decided nobody's going to do this to me. And he went and tried to tackle this short person again, pulled a knife, attacked. But the knife blade didn't do anything. And the next thing he knows is that there's somebody else that comes out of this UFO and used the light to blind Glenzo. Well, good old Jose was standing on the side, and he said, here come two other dwarfs. They've appeared at this roadside. They're carrying dirt and rocks in their arms. And the next thing he observes is that they take what they have found, what they were carrying, and they get into their spaceship. They took all their samples with them. Well, Jose ran. That's right, he ran. And he knew of a police station that wasn't too far away. And his buddy, Gustavo, shows up shortly afterwards. And he ends up having a wound. There was a deep cut on his side. And this is what he reported. He said that the aliens blinded him again with their light as their ship took off. Now, the police, can you imagine what it would be like having two grown men come in talking about aliens from outer space, a floating flying saucer? They thought these guys were drunk. However, they gave them tests. They found they were not drunk. They were totally sober, but they were in shock. And their altercation with these unknown creatures from who knows where was witnessed and verified by one of the doctors who was treating him. How could this doctor verify this? Well, the doctor saw everything happen. He didn't want to even talk about what he saw. But he couldn't let these two men be incarcerated in any way, shape, or form because they told the truth. What do you think about that? It is the truth. It is not make-believe. It is a fact, not fiction. Donna Siebel here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-627-6008. Well, when it comes to various aspects of medicine, there are so many things that through the years we have learned work and other things don't work. And one of the tastes that we've acquired that was quite medicinal at one time, and this was in the 1800s, was Coca-Cola. That's right. Now, today, you'll see through the internet and through various conversations and publications how Coca-Cola, if you have anything that's resting, put it in that Coca-Cola, and it'll eat away the rest. That's right. Pretty potent stuff. Heroin. Heroin, sadly, is a very addictive substance. However, back in the 1800s, heroin was developed because they were trying to find a less addictive substitute for morphine. Sometimes we do things that end up creating side effects that, or even maybe worse conditions than what we originally had anticipated would happen. Do you know ketchup was at a time in the 30s made into pills? I didn't. 1937, there was a Dr. Miles who developed a compound extract of tomato that was ketchup in pill form. And it was used to treat a lot of ailments. I think it was a placebo. Apparently it worked, although I don't know how long it lasted. And then Angostura bitters. What do you know about that? Angostura bitters have been around for a long time. And in many aspects of European environment, you're encouraged to take them because it's a digestive tonic. It's still used today. In the modern world, it's often added to make cocktails. But it actually is something that assists the digestion. Sadly, however, it was also marketed to help keep you from getting scarlet fever or to cure scarlet fever. I don't think it worked very well. Well, this is Donna Sebo. Tomorrow we're going to be talking business. Wherever you are, whatever you're doing, have a magnificent day or evening and know that you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Donna Sebo here. We'll be back with you tomorrow. Same time, same place. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. We're delighted that you were able to join us and invite you to tell your friends and family about the program. Have a wonderful day.